Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock, joined today by Mr. Late Round Quarterback himself, JJ Zacharyson. He has released his prospect guidebook. He's got the takes, the model evaluations of all of these guys. And I mean, we got a shit ton of news in the NFL as well, so we can talk about some of that stuff. But haven't talked to JJ in a while, so excited to get these takes, dude.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to talk about it. You know, the prospect stuff, I feel like, you know, the casual folks who are just looking at this stuff for rookie drafts and whatnot are probably starting to get into it right now. But, you know, with the prospect guide and stuff, I've been in the weeds with it over the last month or so.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that I think this is a weird class, even now being like a month into it and watching these guys. It's not a weird class through any fault of the players who are in it. But specifically for the wide receivers, it's so hard to evaluate this class and like what, you know, the 104 would be worth or whatever, considering that these last 2 years have been like beyond historic. I mean, we have Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, CeeDee Lamb, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Kyle Pitts, like just like an like 10-year superstars are coming out in rookie drafts the last 2 years. And that is who, you know, Treylon Burks and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and these guys are all being compared to. And it's very interesting.
It is. It's a class, I think, at wide receiver that is not as top heavy as what we saw and what we've seen over the last, you know, like last year. You know, I would argue if you compare this year to last year's class, I think this year's class is actually deeper. But I think that last year's class, you know, had the studs. You know, you had Ja'Marr, you had three top 10 picks. I mean, obviously you had a lot of studs last year. I don't think that you're going to get that from this year's class. You know, one of the marks in my model, you know, I basically rank these guys in terms of percentile ranking, and anything over the 95th percentile is usually a pretty good hit rate. And last year you had like four, I think it was five guys that hit that mark. You know, you had the top three, you had Elijah Moore, you had Rashad Bateman. Whereas in this year's class, I don't know if any of them are really going to get there if the capital's not there. I think that some will trickle in. You know, Garrett Wilson has a good chance to do that right now with projected draft capital. He's in the 97th percentile, so he's looking good. You know, Drake London could be there. Treylon Burks is iffy, and he's looking like he's slipping at least a little bit from a capital standpoint. You know, Chris Olave is interesting, but there's no locked in guys like we had last year. I think that's the difference between this year and last year, but I do think that there's some decent depth. Like you can get, if you're in the late first, early second round of rookie drafts, you're not in a bad spot because the difference between those guys versus like the, you know, 105, 106 is not dramatically different.
Yeah. I mean, you know, just kind of looking at ADP guys like Christian Watson, Sky Moore, Wandale. I mean, these are second round picks. And like, I love Sky Moore. The other thing that I think could really throw rookie drafts in flux this year is that despite, as you're saying, you know, a deeper class, but maybe not the true, you know, 99th percentile style prospects, there are so many teams in the back half of the first round that are desperate for a wide receiver. I think we could see six or seven wide receivers go in the first round, and guys who, you know, last year would have been second, third round picks going way up, you know, Sky Moore, Jameson Williams, George Pickens, you know, the Packers need two wide receivers probably, and they pick twice there. The Eagles need a wide receiver. The Chiefs, I mean, if they do not acquire a wide receiver with one of their first two picks, I would be shocked. And that, I mean, they're just so many, and the Jets need a wide receiver. I tweeted the other day about, you know, teams that could potentially be naming one, and like just immediate Jets fans are just spamming my mentions saying like, we desperately need a wide receiver. We can't be out here with Corey Davis as you know, a guy getting 100 targets.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at the list of wideouts in this class, I think it's a lock that we're going to see five wide receivers drafted in the first. Like, that's the baseline, right? Because you're going to get Garrett Wilson, Treylon Burks, Drake London, Chris Olave, Jameson Williams in the first round. And given what's going on at the back half of the first round now, like the very tail end, especially with Kansas City getting rid of Tyreek, and then you mentioned Green Bay, you know, I think that there's a chance that those five wide receivers are gone by some of those picks. And so you're going to be forced, you know, is George Pickens going to be sliding into the late first now? Is, you know, there's been a lot of hype behind Sky Moore. I mean, I remember when I first looked at Sky Moore's profile in like January, I started to get so excited about him. And at that time, he was projected as like a fringe top 100 pick. And now there's a lot of talk that he could slide into the late first round. I mean, that's just the way that
the Chiefs are rumored to be in on Sky Moore.
If Sky Moore goes to the Chiefs, I won't have pants on for like 3 weeks. But yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of players like that, who are not only just gaining hype, but, you know, there's a lot of need at wide receiver across the league. You mentioned Christian Watson, you know, more of a raw player, but someone who I think we should expect at this point is going to go in like the top 50. And if there's a team that just falls in love, who knows what happens with a guy like that. So, you know, there's a lot of players who were at least like early second round guys who could slip in only because there's such a need at wide out across the league.
So what are your models making of the guys who I think the two most interesting guys in this draft class are Jameson Williams and George Pickens. My guess is that had George Pickens not been injured, had not torn his ACL in the spring game for Georgia, my guess is that he would have played extremely well for Georgia, as they were a really good team, and that he would have had, you know, the sort of market share dominator rating numbers that we, you know, associate with truly elite prospects. And he's an early declare, and he put up good times, you know, what, 8 months removed from the ACL injury. Mm-hmm. And he is the guy I think I am most bullish on, compared to consensus. So what are the models make of him?
Yeah. So the thing with like a guy like Pickens is that, you know, a prospect model is looking at production. Like my model looks at things like max season yards per team pass attempt, max season receptions per game, and max season touchdown shares, the three main production metrics that go into this. You know, those things independently, aside from yards per team pass attempt, might not matter that much if you do like a quick correlation test, but when combined, they seem to give me pretty good signal the way that I have things set up. So like receptions per game, for instance, you know, you look at that as a metric and it's like that, you know, that's something that can sway very easily and be skewed very easily based on how pass heavy an offense is, right? But I think the reason why it works within the model is because with a metric like yards per team pass attempt, it's like, you know, but yards per team pass attempt is like a market share statistic that sort of looks like a rate stat, an efficiency stat, but it really, you know, it can skew towards players who make really big plays, like a Diami Brown entering last year, right?
Yeah.
But the reason why I think it works with receptions per game is because it kind of hones it in, right? Because if a player is seeing a lot of big plays, if he is doing that while catching a lot of passes, then he's probably just a good player, right? But if he's doing that and skewing that number with a low receptions per game, the model is going to point that out and say, hey, you know, maybe he's not as good of a prospect. A guy like George Pickens, though, doesn't have a complete production profile because he went through the journey of the torn ACL and dealing with that and not really being able to maximize his production, you know, as a junior. And so, you know, you have to do a little projecting for a guy like Pickens, which is fine, right? In the model right now, my prospect score is like an 85th percentile guy. And that's with the assumption that he's like a mid second round pick. And from a comp standpoint, again, the way I run comps is it's more size on top of, and it's not really athleticism, but with wide receiver, but it's more size combined with production profile. And the guy that he matched up with most, again, with the notion that his production profile is incomplete, so he's like a beefier, you know, boosted up version of this guy, was Nico Collins, was the original comp. But on that comp list was T. Higgins, right? So like, you know, you're looking at a guy who probably has that kind of ceiling like a Higgins, but we should probably, from like a median projection standpoint, say maybe he's like a better version of a Nico Collins, right? Which is not bad. Nico Collins wasn't a bad prospect, right? And so,
yeah, and he got on the field at least, you know, as a rookie, which is a huge deal.
He wasn't terrible this past year. And like the thing with Pickens, is, you know, you don't have a ton of perimeter alphas in this class, which we're not going to really, we just haven't seen that really in general across what we're seeing out of college football and the way the NFL is trending. Like
it's why I'm like nervous about Drake London, even though, you know, 10 years ago I would have been like wide receiver one guy. Yeah. Like he's Mike Evans. He's the best.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So like, you know, the NFL today is a little bit different. We have to be cognizant of that. And we also have to be cognizant of like what the college game is giving us, in terms of just like talent and prospects and what kind of builds they are. Like, I don't think it's like, you know, alpha X wide receivers are dead. I just think that there's a lot of variation to the wide receiver position where it's okay if you want to fall in love with a slot guy. It's okay if you want to, you know, like Elijah Moore last year. It's okay if you want to really like that guy, because he can work in today's league. But Pickens is more of a, you know, he's got size, is, you know, he's still a little bit thinner, but he's got enough size. He can play the perimeter. And we just don't see that frequently. Like think of a guy like Pickens in even like a, I mean, either offense we were talking about, whether it's Green Bay or Kansas City, they need perimeter players. Like they need someone on the outside, especially Kansas City. My goodness. I mean, like I would hope that Kansas City would be able to replace Tyreek Hill with a little bit of speed. Like I think the perfect spot or perfect player for them is like Chris Olave. Like it would just be, or even Jameson Williams. Like one of those guys would be great because they need that speed. They need that threat on the outside. But they just need a threat on the outside at this point because Juju's not going to play that role, or hopefully they're not going to push him and force him into that role. So, you know, I think Pickens is going to find a spot. This is why, just given that he can play as that X on the outside, you know, I do think that he could slide into the first round as a result.
And I think Jameson Williams could too. Yeah, I mean, it's really dependent on what the Packers do, right? The Packers and the Chiefs, like if they both defer, well, I mean, there's like, I think it's very unlikely there's a world where the Packers don't take a wide receiver, but maybe they don't take two, you know, maybe they just take one, and maybe the Chiefs only take one. But Jameson Williams is fascinating too, because only one season of production, right? And he transfers away from Ohio State. And what kind of my thinking this entire time on Jameson Williams is, I'm really not going to hold it against him that he didn't want to play with two other first round wide receivers and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. There was another guy there his freshman year as well, who was
Jackson Smith.
Well, so he's the guy that I think he gets to training camp or, you know, spring training. And he's like, I'm just not going to get on the field because Smith and Igba is unbelievable.
JSN's going to be like, I mean, he could be, I mean, there's two very good studs next year, but I mean, JSN is an incredible, incredible prospect. So it's like, you know, to your point, Jameson Williams is sitting there looking at like the potential to play with three first round wide receivers. You know, you can give him at least a little bit of a pass for wanting to move away. And it's not like he went to the SEC and just like was trash. You know, he was still very, very productive.
Yeah. And was really productive in, like, against good defenses. The SEC production thing is like such a meme, but like, I mean, I really do weigh that, like, because there's such a difference between producing in the Pac-12 and in the SEC in my mind, you know, because the Pac-12 has a bunch of accountants playing defense, relatively speaking, compared to the SEC, where like every team is going to have future NFL players on defense.
Yeah, my model has something called conference factor, and it looks at basically that, right? And it weighs different conferences. You know, a lot of the higher end conferences, whether it's Big Ten or SEC, even the ACC, it'll all rank the same within my model. But when you get to like the Pac-12, it's like this is where you sort of shift things, and it doesn't, you know, just from testing things, you know, things do change a little bit. So given where he played, does matter at wide receiver. It doesn't really seem to get much signal at running back competition, but largely probably because draft capital reflects that enough, and you get enough out of draft capital. But it definitely matters that he played where he played. And again, he produced very, very well. I mean, there's some questions about like his BMI, his size, maybe you could question that. The guy who I think he comps to very, very favorably, at least in my model, was Calvin Ridley. I mean, it's like almost identical, yeah, the things that I look at versus what Jameson Williams and Calvin Ridley did. I mean, both guys, and it's so stupid that they, you know, it's just like such an obvious.
Both,
like,
went to Bama, yeah.
Yeah, like it's such
an
obvious.
I mean, Ridley was, what, 24 when he came in too? Because, like, yeah. I don't remember exactly why Ridley was so old as a prospect, but I just remember it being like, he's so old.
Yeah, so both of them had pretty identical breakout ages, depending on how you calculate breakout age. But, you know, their breakout ages were really similar. Ridley just entered college, like, as a very old player, which is why he, you know, entered the NFL as an old player. But they had similar breakout ages. Ridley's best season saw him with 5.9 receptions per game. Williams at 5.3. Ridley's best season touchdown share was 35%. Williams 31.3%. Ridley's top year in yards per team pass attempt was 2.98. Williams was 2.75. So Williams to me is just like a little bit worse of a version of Calvin Ridley on paper. You know, maybe he finds a spot where he can blow up and do well and et cetera, et cetera. But, like, that's, you know, that's the tier, the caliber that we're looking at. The three comps in my guide for Jameson Williams was Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, and De'Ami Brown. Those were the three that seemed to pop the most for him, which makes sense, especially with a guy like De'Ami Brown, you know, a vertical threat, able to stretch the field. I think that's what we're looking at with Jameson Williams.
All right, what does your stuff make of Wandale? Because he was the guy I wanted to have a great combine. I wanted Wandale to be 5'9". You know, I wanted him to get up to 185 pounds. He wasn't close. He was, I think, in the end, Wandale was 5'8", 178. Which is, you know, it's not as much of a death knell, obviously, as it would have been 5 years ago for his draft capital. I mean, for example, you know, that's only 5 pounds less than Garrett Wilson. That's 10 pounds less than Chris Olave. I thought it was weird he was so small, since he was literally recruited to play running back at the University of Nebraska and was actually a running back as a freshman. He's the guy I just want to get drafted high and go to a good spot. But the combine was really disappointing for him.
Yeah, look, so the way that I kind of look at these guys, because obviously I'm coming at it from an analytical perspective, but the way that I look at prospects is they're sort of like entering as perfect prospects. And then instead of like saying, like, I'm not going to draft this guy because of X, I just view any knock on a player as a red flag more than anything else, right? Like, yeah, they can make up, it's not like a death sentence, but him being 5'8", to me, does matter. Like, there is a threshold when we're looking at history where we haven't really seen a 5'8" wide receiver do anything in fantasy football. And maybe you could argue Tyreek Hill, because his pro day, technically, he was in the 5'8" range, 5'8", 5'9" range. But at the same time, you know, him being listed in the NFL like 5'11", it makes you question the pro day measurements a little bit. And I'm working off of guys who went to the combine and who were drafted. So Tyreek Hill is in my model, but he's his pro day measurements were just iffy, right? Because it's a pro day. And so the only player since 2011 in my model, so guys who went to the combine and guys who were drafted, that really has done anything in fantasy football at 5'8" or shorter has been Jamison Crowder. Like, that's it. Like, that's the best player that we're looking at.
And Crowder, by the way, very similar in terms of, like, played for a shitty team, was kind of all they had on offense, and the team was worse on offense in the years preceding and the years after that Crowder was there. I hadn't even thought about that, but that's pretty interesting to me, because it's so funny. Like, I hate Crowder now because he just is like this, you know, it's such, like, he's like the old boring guy now, and signs with the Bills and his, but, like, as a prospect, I like guys like that. Like, I like guys who are just uber productive at these smaller schools and who you can get with, you know, second. I mean, if Wandale goes in the third round of the NFL draft, he'll probably be a third round rookie pick, would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's no problem with saying that it's possible that Wandale Robinson could be something significant in the NFL as a fantasy asset, because, again, like, you know, if you look at guys who are 5'9", some of them have panned out in recent memory. They've panned out. You got Hollywood Brown, you got Elijah Moore, you got I think Hollywood might have been 5'10", but you got Elijah Moore, at least Steve Smith back in the day. The problem is, you also, with Wandale's comp list, like, his three comps in my prospect guide are Elijah Moore, Marquise Brown, but also Tutu Atwell. Like, you're running into this issue of, like,
Tutu
was also an incredibly productive college player.
So productive, yeah.
And versatile. And it's a similar situation as Wandale here. And so I do think that it forces these red flags. It forces you to think of these guys a little bit differently. It's not like a complete avoid situation, but there's enough good talent in this class where I do think that a 5'8" measurement can and should push a guy down. Now, if he finds a spot where you feel confident in the offensive coordinator, you think that they can utilize a guy like that creatively, that's one thing. But anytime that you start to like make excuses for a player and you need them to be in a certain spot so that they can be used in a certain way, and like it's sort of like Rondell Moore last year. Like I didn't mind Rondell Moore, don't get me wrong. Like I had him in that same tier with a lot of those other guys.
But I mean, Rondell went to a spot where it's like, oh my God, like Cliff's going to know how to use him. And it kind of went in waves. The frustrating part of that was like, he looked pretty promising for like the first month of the season. And then when Hopkins got hurt, instead of expanding his role, they just freaking bring in Antoine Wesley and leave Rondell doing the same thing.
And number one, what does that tell you? But number two, like, I'm not saying that Rondell won't become anything from here on out. I'm more so saying like, we want our guys immediately to appreciate and value from a dynasty standpoint. And Rondell's did not do that, especially versus some of the other guys in that range. Like if you were drafting Elijah Moore over Rondell Moore this past year, you're probably not happy right now. Like even, if you were drafting him over most of, even like a Rashad Bateman, I mean, you're probably not happy that you would take Rondell over Bateman. And I'm not saying that Rondell can't or won't be someone like, I'm fine if you want to go buy Rondell right now. I'm just saying that the more excuses that you make for players, that's at least something that should be a spark in your brain to say, okay, maybe this guy isn't as good because I have to make these excuses and I have to think this way. It's easy to say, oh, Tyreek Hill worked out, but we should not assume that a player is ever going to be Tyreek Hill because he's clearly one of a kind.
Right. So who are some of the guys that your model seems to be more bullish on than the market at this point? You know, we all have like our favorite little, our pet prospects and stuff. So who's one of the guys from your, or a couple of the guys from your model?
Yeah. I'll just go to Sky Moore first. I still think that I'm higher than consensus with him. I think that, I think there's the top five where it ends at Jameson, or Olave, whoever you want. But I personally like Olave quite a bit, despite the lack of early declare status. You know, he's a player who, you didn't necessarily need to come back. And if you can take that junior year production and he still looks great in a model, then I'm not as concerned about the lack of early declare status. But a guy like Sky Moore, it's incredibly, incredibly interesting. Like he's analytically, and then obviously a lot of film people are very into him, but analytically, I'll just read part of the stuff that I wrote about him in my guide, because I think it's kind of fascinating. But he's the only player in this class with top season marks of at least 7 receptions per game, 3.4 yards per team pass attempt, and a 40% touchdown share. So if you use those filters and you look at players since 2011 to hit those numbers, here's the list that you get as long as those guys went top 70 overall, which is where Sky Moore is projected to go. But the list of players that hit those thresholds: Cooper Kupp, Tyler Boyd, Amari Cooper, Tyler Lockett, Jordan Matthews, Sammy Watkins, Allen Robinson, Andy Isabella, Devontae Smith, and Elijah Moore. It was literally only Andy Isabella that you would be upset about drafting in a rookie draft, with a late first, early second round pick. And so I am very, very into Sky Moore. You don't often see early declare smaller school, non-power five players come out of wide receiver. Get the draft capital. The last guy to get this kind of draft capital like that was probably Devontae Adams. And then you look back at other early declare non-power five wideouts. Cortland Sutton's one, Gabe Davis is one. You could argue, Deontay Johnson goes either way because he basically just was out of football for a year, but he only played for 3 years at Toledo. I mean, there are reasons to be very, very bullish on Sky Moore. And I think that he's a slam dunk pick if you can get him in like the wide receiver 7 to wide receiver 10 range in rookie drafts.
Yeah, no, I think you are certainly right about that. A guy I really wanted to have just a fine combine would have been good for David Bell. I was pretty in to David Bell because he was, he was super productive when playing alongside Rondell Moore, which is pretty good. As a freshman at Purdue, he had 1,000 yards, and you know, Rondale only played in 4 games, but was more productive than another NFL player, Bryson Hopkins. And man, his combine was so bad. And I think in this class, with, you know, guys like Christian Watson, who did do really well at the combine, like you know, even guys like Alec Pierce and shit like that, I think he's gonna go. I think he's really gonna tumble. But I like, from a production and age perspective, I was really into him.
Yeah, I'm not as much anymore because I'm worried about the capital. I'm worried about the slide. You know, in my model, it doesn't care about athleticism measurables at all. Like it doesn't matter how fast they run the 40, any of that, because at the end of the day, it's likely going to be captured in draft capital in some way. Does matter a little bit at running back. I do care about speed score at running back, but at wide receiver, you know, I'm more concerned about how they slip in draft capital and draft stock by how they do at the combine, as opposed to what my model is going to directly say. And so my model has David Bell as an 84th percentile prospect right now. And that's with, you know, a draft capital that's slipping, that's dropping a little bit because it was such an uninspiring combine that he had. But I will say, and I know a lot of other people who look at this stuff analytically have said the same thing and seen the same thing. One of his comps is Davante Adams. Like you just have to throw it out there. And you got to look at that and you say, okay, there's a path to him being relevant in some way. I will also say, though, his other top comp is Devier Posey. So
yeah,
it's
this is the meme now, is every guy who's productive in college and then is slow is, you're like, well, worked out for Davante Adams,
right?
You know,
right. And you can't do that. But again, he has very similar size as Adams. You know, he's obviously not a speedy guy. Very productive in college. He has those things going for him. So I can understand that comp from an objective standpoint, but here's the other thing too with comps is that like no one knew Davante Adams was going to be what he became. / Davante Adams wasn't even good in the NFL for the first 2 years of his career. Like, he was
people,
one of the most
people forget that people yeah. have completely memory, like, you know, like Men in Black memory wipe, that like Davante Adams heading into his third season, he was left for dead. I mean, he was like a 18th round redraft pick. You could have had him for free in Dynasty.
Yeah. And the other thing with David Bell, another comp that sort of popped up with him was Chris Godwin. But the problem is that he didn't have the athleticism, right? If he would have gone to the combine and had the athleticism like a Chris Godwin, then you're like, oh, okay, like this could be that kind of player. Like that's who we could be looking at. But he just didn't. And that's why, you know, right now it's just hard to be like very, very bullish on him. I think I have him at like wide receiver 8 or 9 or something like that in my rankings right now.
Yeah. So the running backs, we did have, you just got to be a little concerned about Spiller right now. I mean, he was supposed to be really fast. He was fine. He did run under a 4.6 or whatever, which I saw some people saying, like, as long as he ran under a 4.6, you know, it's fine or whatever. But I don't see a reasonable way to rank Spiller over Kenneth Walker personally.
No, and I had Spiller over Walker at the start of my process with this in January.
I think everyone did. Yeah.
And it's just changed. It's shifted because, again, like, I think that what's important is to always keep in mind what we're trying to solve, what other people versus what other people are trying to solve. And like, there's a lot of people who will watch film for their, to get their analysis for these players. And it's not like I don't watch, like, I still watch these guys. It's just that my process, is very heavily numbers driven. And you know, I think that what gets lost is that what we're trying to solve is that we're trying to win in fantasy football with these prospects and with prospecting, right? Like, at the end of the day, we're taking any inputs that we can get to be better at fantasy and predicting who's going to be good and who's not going to be good. And I think it's okay if we are changing our outlook on players based on what we think draft capital is going to look like, because there's an inherent evaluation going on with millions of dollars behind these teams and their processes and how they're prospecting these guys. I think it's totally fine to be like, okay, yeah, Isaiah Spiller went from maybe an early second round pick in January where he was being mocked to now maybe he's a day 3 pick. And if that's the case, we know that hit rates decrease dramatically when you get out of round 2, even, right? To round 3 and to round 4, et cetera, but definitely into day 3. And so when you get to day 3, if he is a day 3 guy, you know, there are some things to his profile that aren't bad at all. I mean, like, he's still a bigger bodied guy who caught a lot of passes in college, which is something that, you know, that kind of combo you don't see all that often. And I will say
Le'Veon Bell.
Right. And I will say objectively, like, he had some of the best comps within my model, like comp wise. And I don't just go off of player comparables and that's it. But the three comps that I put in my prospect guide for Isaiah Spiller were Miles Sanders, Joe Mixon, and Todd Gurley. And the problem with that, though, is that a lot of those guys didn't necessarily see, I mean, look at Isaiah Spiller too. Like, he didn't see a ton of work on the ground, but he was also utilized as a receiver, but then they all had like a little bit bigger bodies. But the difference is that I don't know if he has the athleticism of those guys. And that's what we're now seeing and finding out with this pro day and how awful that looked, and the way that he's slipping in drafts. So, you know, if he was athletic, if he had the athleticism, I would be very bullish on Isaiah Spiller. But at this point, it's really hard to be because of that draft capital slipping.
Well, and I mean, the other really interesting thing about him is that he, you know, he was in a timeshare with another running back, Devin Achane, who is, I think he is not eligible. I think he's coming out. Yeah, he'll be coming out next year. And that, you know, he was more productive, fewer touches, more yards per touch, more touchdowns, caught just as many passes. And so, I mean, this is kind of like the wide receiver thing where it's like when your teammate is a little bit better than you, it's kind of hard to parse out what exactly that means, especially if it comes out that, you know, I mean, and this is something we will learn, you know, in the future, but like, what if a Shane, I don't even know if I'm saying that right, but what if he is not even that good, you know, and that's kind of one of those things that we learn after the fact.
It reminds me a bit of, I mean, it's not the same player at all. It's actually like the reverse kind of player, but it almost reminds me of like the Kalen Ballage situation from a few years ago, a handful of years ago, where he was splitting a backfield with Demario Richards. And there were a lot of folks who were really into Ballage, but then you have to wonder and start to question, you know, at that point we knew what kind of player Richard was because he was also eligible at the time. And so like you could very easily make an apples to apples comparison, but you know, it's just one of those situations where you have to be cognizant of that kind of stuff when digging into these guys' profiles. And when there are two running backs who very clearly, you know, had their backfield, were general workhorses, especially Breece Hall, then, you know, it's a lot easier to just put those guys ahead of a guy like Spiller, especially when you know that their draft capital is going to look better. I mean, at this point, we know that there's like a 95%+ chance that Kenneth Walker goes ahead of Isaiah Spiller in this draft. And I, you know, that alone can signal that you should be drafting a Kenneth Walker over Isaiah Spiller.
Right. So the quarterbacks, I mean, what is your model? I mean, modeling quarterbacks is so difficult. It's like almost kind of like a,
yeah, I actually errand. I don't even have a quarterback or tight end model, honestly. Because I haven't really I'm not going to publish something just to publish it. Like, I want to test it. I want to make sure it's good. And I just haven't found anything that's good enough at the quarterback position. But I think there's enough, like, you know, there are things that I look at in terms of like, you know, draft capital, obviously. And like, you know, you want a good landing spot for these guys and you want to see what their mobility looks like. And you want to see generally where their age adjusted production looks like and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, this quarterback class is just like not great on paper, it looks like.
Yeah, I will say it does seem as if there is some Malik Willis hype picking up at this point. You know, it seems like
Matt Corral even right now too.
There, it seems like a decent chance that Willis either gets picked by the Lions at two or some team has to trade up for him. Which is that would be a good sign for like his rookie pick value for sure.
Yeah. I mean, like right now I have, like, if you're doing a super flex rookie draft, I have Malik at 102. I have Breece Hall ahead of him. But if it is a situation where, you know, he gets really good capital, there's a team that trades up, he's like a top 10 pick, then it's a lot easier to be like, okay, I'm just going to go with Malik in a super flex format, dynasty format, go with him at 101 because there's something backing this, et cetera. I don't know. And I've seen takes of like Malik's value in like best ball drafts right now.
Yeah.
And people being like, you know, this is arbitrage on Trey Lance, or it's arbitrage on, you know, Justin Fields, whoever, like guys who are going to produce on the ground and through the air, but mostly on the ground, and get the bulk of their production on the ground from a fantasy standpoint. I don't really think that I think that from a season long perspective where you can just pick a guy up, like, that's fine. But I think in best ball, you're risking the chance, and it's a good chance, that Malik might not even like play in 2022. Like he might not even get a start until, let's say, week eight. Like let's say he goes to Detroit. Let's say that he goes to Atlanta, one of these spots, right? What are the odds that he plays right away? I think that the odds are pretty slim. Like I would guess that a guy like Goff gets a fair shot for at least the first half of the season. And if he's playing well, he'll continue to play. If he's not, then maybe we see Malik step on the field. You know, same thing with Marcus Mariota, who they just signed in Atlanta. I mean, like I think that they're going to get fair enough shots. And yes, you know, at the end of the day, we always see these rookie quarterbacks find the field earlier than we expect. But I do think
Trey Lance.
Yeah, unless it's true. But again, but that's the mold of like a very raw prospect, right? And Malik is that same mold where it's just a very raw prospect where there's a high ceiling, low floor. And it's the same thing with what we dealt with Trey Lance, small sample size and such. And so, you know, I think that you're running the risk in like a best ball format where you can't make up for a pick like that. And it's not like the quarterback position is one where you like need to find these like insane edges at, right? Because you generally know the way the quarterback position is going to play out, you know, and there's not that much variance from one to the next. So I just don't think like that's worth it. Cause I do think there's a risk that a guy like Willis ends up just like not playing that much this year. Whereas a guy like Kenny Pickett, you know, if he were to go to Carolina, let's say, I think that there would be a decent shot that he could start week one, or, you know, a guy like him going to Seattle or something like that.
Start pretty early. So, the running back class, I mean, really, there are three guys, and it is not all that deep. But I mean, do you have a favorite of the Rashad White, James Cooks, Tyler Allgeier grouping of guys?
Yeah, you know, I like Rashad White a lot. He's my RB4 right now. I just don't think that the draft capital is going to match where the fantasy community sort of sees him. But his top comp, his comps in my model were really good, but his top comp was David Johnson. That's the kind of player that we're, and it's amazing where I tweet that out, that Rashad White's top comp was David Johnson, and people are like not enthused. And I'm like, how are you not excited about like people forget how good David Johnson was. I mean, like if you get a second round rookie pick who turns into what David Johnson's career was, I mean, you're gold. I mean,
such that's a exact, smash.
Yeah, that's what you want. I mean, David Johnson was a top 10 dynasty asset for a little while.
He finished number one overall in one season of his career. Like,
yeah,
unbelievable.
I mean, like, yeah, you want that. So Rashad White's comps were David Johnson, Jay Ajayi, and Tevin Coleman. So very good comps for a guy who's, you know, he's an 84th percentile prospect in my model right now. He's actually like right there with Isaiah Spiller in terms of prospect score. Isaiah Spiller was like 0.6 percentage points ahead. So he's a good prospect overall. I mean, the one thing that I think that's going overlooked with White a little bit is that it took him a second to get to where he got in college. His journey, you know, he started at Nebraska Kearney, which I've never even heard of before. It's like a satellite campus, I think, for like Nebraska. Right. And then, you know, he transferred to a JUCO school where he plays his sophomore year. And then he finally got to Arizona State. But he didn't really give us production until his senior season. So like we can't, you know, this is not a flawless prospect by any means. And I think sometimes the way people talk about White is that there aren't many red flags, but there definitely are some red flags. And I think the biggest one is the fact that he's an older-ish prospect who really had to like go through a lot to get to where he got.
Yeah. And then, I mean, do you have any thoughts on the tight ends? So we had Jalen Weidermeyer's pro day yesterday, and he ran like an offensive lineman. I think he's going to go undrafted now. One of the interesting guys is the UCLA guy, Greg Dulcich, who was reasonably productive his final season in not a very good passing offense. He seems a little interesting to me, maybe a guy who gets pumped up a little bit in the draft, because we're all like, all these teams are looking for, you know, pass catching tight ends. 42 receptions, 725 yards, 5 touchdowns as a senior. And I, you know, the breakout age and things like that for tight ends, it's like, yeah, it's nice. You know, we all love the Kyle Pitts got on the field younger, but like tight ends, so much of it is just about like opportunity. And if a team actually gives them that role.
Yeah, one guy who is kind of climbing for me is Jelani Woods out of Virginia. You know, I don't prospect tight ends the same way I do running backs and wide receivers for a lot of reasons.
He had a crazy combine pro day.
But he's 6'7", and he's like 250 plus, and he ran I don't remember what it, I think his 40 was like 4.6, 4.61 or something like that. But I mean, like he's a monster. I remember cause I watched a ton of Pitt, this past year, especially cause they were great. And I loved, you know, I'm a Pitt alum. It was great. But I remember when Virginia played them and Jelani Woods just ate them apart. And I was watching, I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
And my, like, he was just a behemoth. I mean, the guy is a monster. And like, that's the kind of like I've done a lot of studies on finding breakout tight ends and redraft leagues and stuff. And like what you look for and stuff, speed, height adjusted speed score and measurables in general are so important at the tight end position from a fantasy perspective, a lot more than wide receiver, a lot more than even running back. And Woods is someone who has that size, speed, you know, that athleticism combo, that I tend to look for and want, you know, like, you mentioned the Weidermeyer thing. I mean, like he's just like off my draft list.
He's now. Just gone. Like he's,
yeah. It just doesn't matter. I think Trey McBride's going to be the easy go-to, at tight end one. But I do think there are some interesting dart throws outside of that, which Jelani Woods being the one that's probably top of my list as like a, from like a dart throw standpoint.
Yeah. I'm a little interested in Charlie Kolar. I don't know. I don't know how much he ran, but I mean, he caught 23 touchdowns. He mm-hmm. played as like a primary pass catching tight end for, it's interesting. Like what's the name of their stupid quarterback who like was such a prospect and then just like got worse every single year. But I mean, he's super slow, like really low speed score and everything like that. But I'm a little interested in him if he signs anywhere good. I think that was a good tease for the prospect model. So why don't we tell people where to buy it and the late round draft guide and just all of the in-season stuff that will be coming from lateround.com.
Yeah, and the USC quarterback that you're thinking of is Slovis, who just transferred to Pitt and is now
not Slovis. Brock Purdy was the guy I was thinking of, who is like unbelievable and then literally got worse every single year. But yeah, Slovis is same thing. Basically.
It's a very same, yeah, very similar trajectory where it was like, oh, this dude's going to win the Heisman. And then it's just like, okay, I don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, the prospect guide you can purchase over on lateround.com. You know, I talked through what goes into my prospect model for a good, like 20 plus pages. And I just, you know, there's some dad jokes thrown in there to make it interesting and such. And then I profile every single player that went to the combine. And so there's profiles on 76 players overall, from a prospect standpoint. And then I also have my year two model in there, which looks at prospect scores, how a player did in year one as a rookie. And there's a formula that spits out where these guys rank in percentile ranking for year two and year three. It tries to predict how these guys are going to perform in year two or year three. So like, you know, what do you think about Amon-Ra St. Brown? Well, there's a model for that to at least help you and guide you a little bit. So I did profile 15 wide receivers in that and 10 running backs in that. So, you know, if you're sitting there in your dynasty league and you have Trey Sermon and you're wondering what the heck to do with him, if you have Elijah Mitchell and you're wondering what to do with him, that's all profiled in the prospect guide as well.
There we go. Everyone, lateround.com, sign up, get the prospect guide, get the draft guide, sign up for the Patreon and support Mr. Guy Who Hates Gronk. How tilted are you that Gronk just won't go away?
It's not tilting at all. It's not even remotely tilting because I don't hate Gronk.
I had to, you know, I had to bring it back to the beginning. So everyone, lateround.com, and we will be back with more fantasy football podcasts next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at LegendsWithAZ.com.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.